This is the Coast Cider Podcast. Hello, this is Barry Parr. I'm here with Laura Stein, who is a write-in candidate for the Mid-Coast Community Council. Laura, can I get you to introduce yourself and talk a little bit about why you're running for MCC?
Yes, once again, my name is Laura Stein. I am a write-in candidate. As to why I'm running, I had been on the council about 14 years ago, and I served a four-year term at that time. Within the last month or so, I was approached to be on the MCC and to run as a candidate, and I told them no. And the only reason I told them no is because I'm well aware of the time and energy commitment. I was then approached again, and since the first time I had been asked, I began to look into some of the topics that were being discussed in a little more detail. And it did look like there were some very important issues coming before the council. I also believe very strongly that people should be involved and give back to their community. So taking those two things in consideration, I did say yes, and so that's why I am at a late point in the race here, and once again running as a write-in candidate.
So what are the mechanics for a write-in candidate? Do you still have to go through a process with the county and in order for your name to be valid as a write-in?
Yes, absolutely. I did have to meet with the elections office, and they verify your information. Following that, I will not have a statement, obviously, within the pamphlet. And when you go to vote at the polls, you would have to ask for a write-in ballot because I don't believe that our computerized machines can handle a write-in candidate. And I believe that's about it.
Oh, you have to ask for a write-in ballot in order to vote for a write-in candidate?
You know, Barry, to be perfectly honest, I have to research this a bit more. This issue just came up. And, yes, it's my understanding that the machines are not capable of handling the particular type we use in San Mateo. There are other machines in other states I have seen that will, like, pull up a keyboard where you could put someone's name in, but ours do not, as far as I can tell. But I'll know more on Monday.
Oh, that's really interesting. Definitely get in touch with me and let me know what the situation is on that.
Okay.
Because if people go in and ask for a ballot expecting to be able to write your name and then find out that they don't know what to do once they get on the machine, that's potentially an issue, isn't it?
Well, there's that issue, and if it is, in fact, that they have to, trying to put the word out that you will have to ask for a ballot if you go to a polling place, there's then the problem of will they have sufficient ballots, looking on the positive side.
That's what you're hoping for, right, is a run on write-in ballots.
That there's no way they can have enough ballots. So, yeah.
Oh, that's really interesting. You were on the Mid-Coast Council 14 years ago, so things, I guess, have changed probably quite a bit since you were there.
Well, here's the interesting item that I did discover. So, of course, I went back and began to dig through some old files, and there's so many things that are so very much the same, I was pretty shocked. So we had, for example, a committee that started the process for the LCP to be altered. The issue around how meetings are run and that type of a thing has come up. Whether committees have to come through the MCC or they don't, many, many things are very much the same.
Oh, that's really interesting. Talk to me a little bit about what issues that are before the MCC right now or ones that you think should be before the MCC that you think are most important and where you stand on those.
Okay, well, I'll start with the LCP. This is a very technical area, so I'm not going to go into great detail. The way that I understand it right now, it has gone from the council with their recommendations to the county. The county has made their changes and recommendations, which both the council and the Coastal Commission has submitted to them. It is now in the Coastal Commission's hands to bring it to a hearing. And at this point, they have not got it scheduled on a calendar.
Mm-hmm. And just to back up a second, so the LCP is the Local Coastal Program, which is required by the Coastal Act. So it really has to be a part of the community zoning. and the community creates it, but it has to be approved by the Coastal Commission. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And I believe ours has been in the works for something on the order of 10 years.
Go to 14.
14.
Seriously, we had a committee back in, I believe it was 97 or 98, specifically to begin to look at the changes that were going to be needed in the local coastal plan.
Isn't that interesting? And now it's before the Coastal Commission. They are not going to be looking at it for, looks like, in 2011 at this point.
She told me, it wouldn't be scheduled before the end of the year, and in fact, it's not even scheduled as of right now.
Yeah. And I know that Coastal Commission staff had some issues with what the county had done, and they were negotiating with county planning staff over some of those disputes. Is that still true? Are they still negotiating, or is it settled at this point with staff?
To be perfectly honest, I don't know exactly where it stands with that. I do know that there are some, I can tell you this, and it is very technical. The lot requirements regarding, for example, substandard lots,
mm-hmm.
Initially what we supported was we wanted those basically to merge, all right? But the county said no, they don't support that. The Coastal Commission wants it. I'm just using this as an example.
Right.
So this is now going to the Coastal Commission to be reviewed. And it's important for people to understand the impact of this, because then basically what you're doing is we wanted them combined, so you would have one buildable lot. The county does not. That means two buildable lots, which means basically double the impact on your infrastructure,
mm-hmm.
double houses, the impact on your sewer, your water, clearly your traffic.
Yeah. And also because those lots are smaller, the houses tend to be smaller, and once they're built out, what you wind up with is a pretty densely built community. And
yes.
you can see some examples of that in Miramar, where very narrow lot houses have been built on very narrow lots.
Yes, exactly.
What other issues are before the Midcoast, or do you anticipate coming before the Midcoast Council over the next couple of years?
Okay, well, one of my most favorites that has been important to me for the last 14 years is the transportation issues that's being addressed right now through the county's mobility and safety project here on the coast. Now, my problem with that is it feels to me like there is some piecemeal planning being done. So currently what they're looking at and what they've done is community meetings, which would allow people to take a look at and bring up issues that are important to the community, such as safety issues, where it's particularly hazardous to pull out into traffic, where it's particularly hazardous for pedestrians to be. And so then there's recommendations coming out of this. Now, from what I can tell, at the last MCC meeting, the recommendations will be coming, they will have, provided a consolidated report, the county will, it'll be brought back to the public. They're going to create a steering committee, which will have a couple of weeks to comment. It'll go back to the county, but as far as I know, there's no funds to actually make any of this happen.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one issue. But going back to the problem I have, and that is with the piecemeal planning, and I'm going to pull in another topic here, which is the highway widening in Pacifica that's currently a hot topic, which in my opinion is another example of piecemeal planning. So if what I have wanted, and this was 14 years ago, is a master plan, transportation plan for Route 1. And what I mean by that is I'll give an example of what's gone on elsewhere in the state. I did locate plans that, so for example, there's a transportation plan from Santa Cruz all the way down to Santa Barbara. I believe this came from Caltrans money, and I'm not exactly sure. But what they did is each of those communities, which are all along Route 1, took a look at their land use plans, and they came up with, together, what they see for the future of Route 1 and had a major plan for what they expect. They also did, they basically have done this along Route 1 every place except in our district, transportation district, District 4.
Hmm.
So I'm curious as to why that hasn't happened. I know that they're trying to do a piecemeal part of that here, from what I understand, but I don't think there's funds for that either. But at any rate, my feeling is if you had that master plan in place, it would stop the, we need, you know, a stoplight here because somebody got hurt, or we need to widen the road here.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's a really interesting point. I mean, there's a lot, I mean, you can see it in action, certainly in Pacifica, where they seem to be widening the highway piece by piece.
Yes, exactly. What's missing to me is that, so for example, the, traffic planning doesn't happen in a vacuum, and I'm certainly no engineer, but it seems to me that if I do something at an intersection in El Granada, it's going to have an impact on the traffic in Pacifica and on the traffic in Half Moon Bay.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been extremely difficult and frustrating in the past to get any data or models on, okay, if we put a traffic light in here, what does that do to the traffic up here? What does it do to the traffic back here? And I think that was the beauty of these plans along the coast, where they're planning large, how shall I say, sections and areas, and coordinating their plans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
That does make sense. That's,
okay.
That's a, yeah, it's a very good point. And we've got certainly a lot of issues around traffic and plans for Highway 1, and I think a lot of people have very different visions for what Highway 1 looks like on the coast side going forward. What other issues? So that's two.
Okay. All right. Now, let's see. Are these issues that I'm getting confused with the question? Are these
okay.
issues
yeah.
that I think will come up, or are these issues that I want to address?
Well, things that you think are really important that are either you think are going to come before the MCC or that you would like to see come before the MCC.
Okay, well, speaking within the transportation realm, I think we need a major campaign on public transportation. And by public transportation, I don't necessarily mean, a new SamTrans bus or things that will cost money.
Mm-hmm.
And back, in my opinion, this should have come before the safety and mobility study. I think there's a lot of things that we can do here that can take traffic off the roads. I think it's going to be a process. I think it's going to take a long time. But I think we need to start now. I think the rest of the world is way ahead of us here on the coast. And even over the hill, they're, you know, of course, doing their planning now around, you know, city centers to try to reduce the amount of cars on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it feels to me like very little has been done here. I have certainly heard, you know, the parallel trail to Route 1 is terrific. I think that it's not necessarily going to answer the need that people think it will. And I'm basically speaking to that as a mother. It is extremely difficult even to get your child to walk down and take a bus. Okay, let alone, okay, get on your bike, your 50 pounds of school books, and
mm-hmm.
go to school. Okay, I think it's really important, and I'm not trying to say it's not, but I mean from a, public transportation issue and taking cars off the road, I'm not sure it's going to have the impact that people think that it will.
Yeah, speaking as someone who's ridden my bike from Montero to Princeton or Half Moon Bay, I can see the parallel trail filling a really important purpose. I don't know how many actual school kids from the Midcoast are going to wind up in Half Moon Bay High School as a result of that.
Yeah, I mean, people can't take it to work. And please, not for a second am I saying it's not important and it's
right.
something that I want as well. But from the perspective of how do we get cars off the road,
mm-hmm.
I don't think it's really going to have that great of an impact on that issue.
What other solutions can you think of?
These are off the top of my head, and I
sure.
have not done any study or research, and people will tell me, and they do tell me, oh, yeah, well, we have somebody who, you know, we have the SamTrans that operates here, and you're not going to get any money, and you're not going to be able to do anything. My feeling is it's more of a PR campaign, and just a couple of examples. So we have all sorts of sports here, you know, for the kids. We have the soccer, we have softball, these types of things. If you ever go to a soccer game, for example, here in El Granada, the streets are packed with cars. Every single child comes in a separate car with their parents. I would like to see that it just becomes a given that when you sign up for these, and whoever's organizing these sports, it is a given that somehow or another, if you're living in the same area, we're going to help arrange, even if that's, you know, that's several cars off the road right there. Mm-hmm. So I'm just talking about small things like that that happen in our community. Like I said, it's a process. It'll take a long time. People like to be in their own car and go and do what they want, you know, when they want to do it. Another idea I had was if there's any way the businesses would be willing to get together and pay for a shuttle. We'd have to, of course, find a place for parking, but I can imagine someone coming to coming into our town and, you know, okay, we're going to have a day at the beach. Here's the tour. You go to the beach, then we'll take you to such and such a restaurant. You know, then we'll take you to the Marine Reserve. You know, what a joy not to have to be driving your car around and not know where things are and have to get directions and sit in traffic. So just things that we can look at as a community.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, yeah, transportation issues are obviously a critical one. So I know one issue that's come up recently and it's been kind of a hot button in the community has to do with local government. You know, should we be unincorporated? Should we be our own incorporated city on the Midcoast? Should we merge with Half Moon Bay? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yes, we went through this also 14 years ago. The exact same thing. My biggest thought right now, I prefer to make my decisions based on data and not emotion. Mm-hmm. And I have not seen any real data as of yet to even attempt to make the decision. So I would hold off on speaking about that until I had more facts.
Okay. That's fair. And have you been involved in any of the discussions around what the Harbor District is looking at with respect to the Perch Beach?
The only thing that I know, I did attend the meeting the other night. And, you know, once again, it's build a building in the view corridor. There's a plus and a minus to the discussion that I saw that was the group that was sponsored, the presentation, excuse me, that was sponsored by the Harbor District. The plus is that people want to make the harbor a real center of activity, and I think that's terrific. And they had lots of wonderful ideas about how we can make that a community center. The minus is how they're wanting to go about it. And one of the things that I had brought up, and actually it connects to this idea of annexation, incorporation, et cetera. Of course, this was 14 years ago, but we did do studies about office space. And it was determined that people are not going to come over here to put their businesses and use their office space or lease it. And so that's pretty much what this building would be for the Harbor District, would be for them to make revenue, because they're clearly not going to be making it from the fishermen. And I'm just not convinced that that's financially viable, along with, this is a view corridor. You know, there should be absolutely nothing on that side of the highway, and the Coastal Commission will be involved. So that's all I know at this point.
Okay. Yeah, that's really helpful. That's certainly an issue that's been kind of under the radar. I think a lot of people aren't aware of what's actually planned out there.
Oh, what's funny is this is another issue that came up about 14 years ago. And that was, I think that they, I don't remember exactly. I believe it was an immense, like, bathroom complex they were going to put up, but once again, you know, very visible and something the community would not want to be looking at.
Yeah. So have you been to many MCC meetings in the last year or two?
No, I followed, the only thing I have followed through the review, and obviously people that I know, I've gotten feedback. So where is this question leading?
The question. Yeah, this is something I've asked other folks as well, is, you know, the MCC has not exactly been an entirely functional organization over the last couple of years. That they're dealing with a couple of issues. I think it's always been difficult for people to get people to come to the meetings. There's the issue of the fact that MCC is strictly an advisory body and has no authority. And that I know personally, when I've tried to get MCC to address issues, that it could take them months to do something as simple as put together a letter. And
yes,
you know, given the magnitude of the problem, and it's I think it's continued through you know, various changes in personalities among the people who were there. I guess I'm asking a two-part question, or two different questions. One has to do with how do you get the MCC to work better with the community and get engage more community involvement with MCC? And the other piece is, do you have any thoughts on improving the way that MCC works?
Okay. Well, that's a large question there. First of all, when anybody speaks to me about, you know, how they've done this wrong or that wrong or what have you, the first thing you have to do is step back and look at the structure. And that is that, as you mentioned, we have only advisory capacity. Number two, this is entirely volunteer, and I can tell you that it could easily be, and is for some people, a full-time job.
Mm-hmm.
To contrast it, I also spent 4 years as a director on the Granada Sanitary District. When you are in a special district, for example, number one, you do get paid. It's not much, but you do get paid. And number two, you generate the projects and the timing that they come before you. If you're on the MCC, projects of any type can be flying at you at a very rapid rate. You have a group of people who, first of all, are donating their time. You have no money. You have nobody to help with anything. It's all your time. And you have people from varying backgrounds. You know, there's many people, they have no business experience. They've never had to lead a group. But their heart is in the right place there to help with the community. So the other piece of this is, I think that it's a process that all organizations go through. If you've ever talked to anybody, for example, who's been in condo associations, they have the same complaints, or any type of community organization. So I don't think the problem is unique, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
As far as how I improve it, is that where I'm
going?
Yeah. Okay. Okay, well, number one, you have issues such as conduct. You have protocol, and that is something I, you know, once again, I keep saying 14 years ago. It was the same issue back then, and I had written up, and we even had a protocol committee about exactly how everything is done and what's the procedure. So that's a start. You've got to have the framework in place. Secondly, and a lot of people get angry at me for this, but I think everything is based on personal relationships in this life. When I say that, and I say that you need to have develop personal relationships with the county, with the people that you're going to be dealing with, sometimes people interpret that to mean that you're going to, you're not going to fight for what you believe in and for what should happen here on the coast. To which I disagree. And all of this is a process, and it takes time, and it doesn't happen overnight. And you have to consider that all the people on the council are, you know, they're rotating through cycles of being elected. The same with the Board of Supervisors. So you have on each end different people getting to know each other and their work style, and then it changes. So I think developing relationships is major.
Mm-hmm. That sounds right. That gets people angry when you say that?
I think they misinterpret what I'm saying, and they believe that I'm saying, it's sort of like, well, if you're nice to them, then that means that you're negotiating with them, and that means that you're going to give away the shop, if you will.
Yeah. I think that's a very interesting point. I mean, it really has to do with, being able to work together, the whole issue of comity, you know, being able to be in a relationship with someone that you don't necessarily agree with.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. I haven't asked you this. So where do you live, Laura?
I live in El Granada.
Okay. So as you think about the Midcoast over the next 10 to 20 years and how you think you'd like to see it develop? I mean, do you have a vision of, you know, what kind of community this place would be, you know, in the long run?
Okay. First of all, my vision would be that we continue to retain our small towns with their individual cultures. I think a lot of times people want to combine all of us, Moss Beach, Montana, and El Granada, into one. And I think that they need to continue. They're special, and they need to be separate. I don't want them all combined into one. I just think we're going to have to. Okay, I'm losing track of my question here, Barry.
Okay, I'm talking about the vision of the future, and I certainly agree with your first point. I mean, you know, here in Montero, we, you know, that, you know, we know that folks down in El Granada don't know what they're doing.
You're seeing clearly, yes.
No, so yeah, and I think, you know, once you've lived here a while, you realize just how very different each of these little towns is, and you know, it's really kind of surprising. I'm
Oh,
sorry,
I know
and
where I
I
want to go with this.
yeah, go ahead. I kind of digress there for you.
Oh, that's okay. Go
Yeah,
ahead.
no, go ahead. You
Okay.
finish. Yeah, you continue to talk about your vision for the community in the, you know, say the next couple of decades.
Probably the most important thing is that we maintain this rural, small town ambiance. It is so easy for it to get away from you. I mean, all you have to do is drive down to Santa Cruz and you see the incredible amounts of traffic. And you can see how little by little the original intent of the town has changed. And I would hate for that to happen here. And the bottom line is money. And so we're going to have to really take a strong stand and do a lot of relationship building. As I said, take it when we want.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, that sounds like something that has to go on. It's a community that is very polarized over a number of issues as well, and that's, I think, part of the struggle, and it's one of the reasons that a lot of local elections tend to be incredibly contentious. Well, thank you, Laura. That was really helpful, and I've really enjoyed our conversation, and it's given me a better understanding of you as a candidate.